lobby is open and the recording has begun.
Okay, thanks, Justin. Good morning, everybody. First, as we said, we're recording this as we do all of them. For those of you there here in the board meeting, board room with us, careful, the microphones above are very sensitive. No pickup, any chatter, crinkling paper and all sorts of things. So if you can just help us to make sure those that are listening remotely can hear clearly, that would be great. Take any conversations out to the lobby. Be much appreciated. Our first item today is an exciting one, and that's the consideration of the Cannabis Compact with the Ho Tribe. We have two guests who I'll introduce and we'll have a chance to hear from in a minute, but Bernard After Buffalo and Brian Cole, council members from the Ho Tribe, made the trip here today, and we're really honored to have you here. And I'll ask Chris Thompson, our tribal relations person who helped negotiate this compact, present this compact to us for approval.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and Board Member Garrett. Hopefully I'm coming through okay. What I'd like to do is just present a couple of highlights.
For background information and your awareness as you consider action on the proposed compact before you today. I can't recall the date when we first heard from the Ho Tribe, but with all tribal cannabis compacts, the process starts with an expression by the tribe of interest in developing an agreement with the state for cannabis operations. We sit down and negotiate with tribal representatives, our agency as delegated authority from the governor, and confer where necessary or consult with agencies such as Department of Revenue, put together a final proposed agreement. And what you have before you today is that proposed agreement, which if approved would go to the governor for final review and an action by Governor Inslee. If signed by the governor, it becomes effective immediately. I want to thank the Ho Tribe and their representatives for their superb collaboration and work with us. The tribe was very open to suggestions and thoughts that the agency had. This compact mirrors very closely our template, which we developed for any tribe that wants to work through this process as a starting point to accelerate the process, because the template reflects previously vetted and approved language and provisions. There are very few differences between our template and the final proposed agreement. There are a few that are important, and essentially they're just about all of them at the request of the LCB and the state. And I want to again thank the tribe for their openness and their consideration of the requests that we made as part of this process. So a few examples. One is that there's a new dispute resolution set of provisions that our Assistant Attorney General Leo Ranilla developed as a way to clean up, streamline, and beef up the process. So for example, most tribal cannabis compacts do not have provision for binding arbitration. This, what the Ho Indian Tribe does. It doesn't permit the arbitrator to determine questions of law, but a number of important potential issues that could come up in dispute would be subject to that process if it gets there, if mediation doesn't work. So we think that's a better process for the state's partnership with tribes. We think it's an important way to make more robust the agreement and the collaboration between the two parties. We have that in this agreement that hasn't come up in previous cannabis compacts with tribes. We also are appreciative of the tribe that they were willing to make a shift in terminology that the state is underway in making from the word marijuana to the word cannabis. The legislature passed legislation in session to make that change throughout the state law, directed our agency to do that in regulations. And we're now asking tribes to consider that change in cannabis compacts with the state. The Ho Indian tribe was very amenable to that. A couple of areas that are a little bit more technical where we've updated, the template's a little out of date. It refers to the traceability system, which we have retired and now using CCRS and a weekly reporting cycle, not a daily reporting cycle. So examples like that of where we've updated this compact from what we actually had in the template. Drive-through service is not permitted under the compact, and that's an issue that we've heard repeatedly is an important priority to the U.S. Attorney's Office. So that provision has been addressed that way in this one, this compact as well. Finally, excuse me, one other important issue that I want to mention. This is the first compact we have with a disputed comma included. And let me briefly explain what I mean. When the legislature originally authorized the state to compact with tribes for cannabis operations, that statute included discussion of under what circumstances the tribe could exempt from the tribal cannabis tax sales to customers. And that was that language included a series of categories of possible exemptions. When the bill passed the legislature and was signed by the governor, it did not include the comma. The code revisor in brackets inserted the comma in the statute. And so because of that history of that bracketed comma, the LCB did not recognize the comma. And as a result of that, we've had lots of sometimes heated discussions with tribes around this issue as we've developed compacts. This session in 2022, the legislature passed House Bill 1210, which removed the brackets, clearly placed the comma in statute. And as a result, the agency now recognizes it, and our interpretation of what the statute allows has changed as a result of that. That enabled us to take a different approach with this compact in the Ho Indian tribe. Without the comma, there were, in our view, only two categories of allowable exemption from tax. With the comma, there are now three. And so that's what we recognize and is reflected in this proposed compact. First, sales to tribal members, tribal enterprises, the tribe itself, or a tribal member business. That is an allowable exemption if the tribe chooses to, and that was never in dispute from our perspective. Second, transactions that are otherwise exempt under state or federal law from this tax. Medical patients are an example there. And third, this is the newly recognized category, cannabis grown, produced, or processed within Indian country may be exempted from taxation. And we believe that this important change by the legislature gives us really highly desired clarity, clears up an ambiguity in state statute, and we believe that it provides a fuller recognition of tribal sovereignty, which we think is entirely appropriate and perhaps overdue. It also takes off the table an issue that has bogged down discussions and negotiations with other tribes in previous efforts to develop a compact. So we're very happy to have the legislature's help in resolving that issue and providing for fuller recognition of tribal sovereignty and possibly helping us to improve our relations with our partners in Indian country. So that's my presentation. I think otherwise the compact reflects what has been previously approved. We already have 20 tribal compacts in place. This would be number 21. So I'll be happy to try to answer any questions if you have them.
I don't. Any questions, Member Garrett? No. Okay.
No questions.
Yeah, no, I think you briefed us well on this. Appreciate it. This is why punctuation is important to learn, because it made a big difference in this issue, and I'm glad that it was resolved, even in the odd way that it did end up getting resolved. So that'll help us going forward, I think. So at this point, I would call the council members up to see any comments they might have. Thanks again for making the trip. Really appreciate it, council member. And turn it over to you.
Hachi'e, Kula'ele, Bernard after Buffalo Jr., Hele, Shalak, Usalio, Hache. My name is Bernard, or I call myself Bernard after Buffalo Jr. I hail from the Shalat Nation. I'm glad to be here today. I have with me Brian Cole, another council member from the Ho Tribe. The Ho Tribe is located in a remote section of the Olympic Peninsula. Our reservation is on the last mile of the Ho River before it flows into the Pacific Ocean. We are surrounded by the Olympic National Park, homesteads, and private timberlands. Given our location, we have limited economic development opportunities. This compact provides for us an enterprise as we progress forward. We appreciate the LCB and its staff for working with the Ho Tribe to develop a compact that highly benefits our communities. We would be honored to be the 21st compacted tribe with the state for cannabis. Wachilita Sosto from the Ho Tribe.
Thank you. Councilmember Cole, anything to add?
I just wanted to offer up a song.
Great. Great. Thank you both. Appreciate it. So as we had a chance to talk briefly ahead of time, we have the most beautiful land, and to drive up that coast and see it, it's what in my head is what Washington State is like, that rainforest and where the river goes to the ocean is just unbelievable. And the Ho do such a great job as stewards of their land and protectors of their people. And we're just really thankful we're able to work with you on a government-to-government basis here to help you in your next steps on economic development. So best of luck with this. Thank you both. And with that, we'll entertain a motion to approve the cannabis compact with the Ho Tribe.
I move approval to adopt the consideration of the cannabis compact.
Great, and I second, and that is approved unanimously, and we will ship this over to the governor's office right away for his signature as soon as possible, and we'll let you know as soon as that happens. So thank you both, and thank you, Chris, for bringing it to us. Safe travels back. Okay, moving on. We have a long list of cannabis-related rulemaking and some others, petitions, and that we were briefed on yesterday during caucus, but we're going to go through them one by one today and see if there's any questions at in between. First up, Audrey Vasek is going to present the rules petition on record keeping requirements. This is the cloud storage proposal. Good morning, Ms. Vasek.
Good morning, Chair Postman, Board Member Garrett. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today. So today I'm presenting the staff recommendation on the rule petition the board received on July 8th from Rick Davies on behalf of the Washington Cannabis Business Association. So this request asks the board to conduct rulemaking and stakeholder engagement to update WAC 314-55083 and 087 to allow cannabis licensees to use cloud storage options for certain record keeping requirements because, quote, the current requirement to keep hard copies in storage devices or paper form physically on premises is cumbersome and costly, An updated set of regulations that allows licensees to utilize cloud storage options will create greater efficiency and cost savings while increasing transparency, security, and safety, end quote. So the issue presented by this petition is whether the board should initiate the rulemaking process to consider allowing cannabis licensees the option of using cloud storage instead of physical on-premises storage for record keeping required in the WAC. So for background, under RCW 6950-342, the board has statutory authority to create rules regarding record keeping and security requirements for cannabis licensees. Under the current rules, cannabis licensees are required to keep and maintain most types of records on premises for 5 years. There are different record keeping requirements for visitor logs, which have to be kept on premises for 3 years, and surveillance system recordings, which have to be kept on premises for 45 days. So while storing those records in electronic or digital form is not prohibited by the current rules, licensees are still required to keep and maintain the physical hard copies on premises. So in discussing this petition request with agency staff from the Enforcement and Education Division, Finance, and IT Divisions, we found there are several key issues to consider when evaluating the risks and benefits of allowing cloud storage for record keeping instead of physical on-premises storage. Some of these issues are: how will access to the records be ensured, how will the records be preserved, and how will they be secured, and how will they be authenticated? So for example, with respect to the first issue, ensuring access to the records, in theory, cloud storage could make it easier for licensees and staff to find and access records and increase efficiency and transparency, as stated in the petition request. However, allowing cloud storage as an option instead of physical on-site storage would also mean some records that are currently kept on premises and are accessible on site would only be accessible through a computer with an internet connection or another device with an internet connection. So if hard copies aren't required to be kept on premises, it could make it more difficult for staff and licensees to access records during an investigation. So for that reason, if cloud storage is allowed as an option, staff find it will be important to explore development of potential safeguards to mitigate this risk and ensure that there's timely access to records stored in the cloud. Similarly, with respect to preserving the records, although records in the cloud aren't vulnerable to the same physical risks that records kept on site might face, such as degradation due to on-site storage conditions, records kept in the cloud do face physical risks. They are stored in physical computer servers that are owned and operated by third parties. And so just like any other computer server, cloud storage servers could fail, data stored in the cloud could be lost or damaged. And so again, if cloud storage is allowed as an option, agency staff find it would be important to explore developing procedures for preserving records, such as backups. And in some cases when the original document is handwritten, which is often the case, for example, with pesticide application records, it may be appropriate to explore requiring preservation of the original handwritten record. So there are similar issues with respect to security and with authentication. And just briefly, I'll touch on those. With authentication, you know, digital and electronic documents are more easily altered and edited. And so another issue that the LCD staff think would be important to explore if cloud storage is allowed would be ways to authenticate records to ensure they're not altered, whether intentionally or accidentally. So considering those potential risks and benefits, the director's office staff recommendation is to accept the rule petition request. Initiating the rulemaking process as requested in the petition would allow agency staff to begin collaboratively engaging with stakeholders and any interested members of the public to explore using cloud storage as an option instead of physical on-site storage. And it could be expanded to beyond just cannabis licensees. So could look at alcohol, tobacco and vapor licensees as well. So that concludes my presentation, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
I think maybe just more of a quick comment on the question of authentication and physical backup of certain records. We obviously at the LCB use a lot of electronic records, some of which may be stored. I'm just hoping when we do this, we are thinking globally in terms of what are our practices and maybe not requiring, so, you know, licensees to do something where we ourselves aren't doing. So I would just, as we go through this, I'll be curious to know what our practice is for how we authenticate records, especially since the work you just helped us do on electronic filing of documents through adjudication and other. We obviously are relying more and more on not necessarily the cloud, but electronic. So if we can keep an eye on that. I think one of the important things and that we will watch and hope enforcement is super engaged in this process is so that they do have what they need, what tools they have in terms of looking on site. You know, some there are times where they walk into a place and want to see something then. And how is that going to happen? So those are my only thoughts. Member Garrett, anything? Okay, then we'll take a motion for the staff recommendations to accept the petition to amend the cannabis licensee record keeping requirements in WAC 314, 55, 083, and 087.
I move that we accept the rules petition review and considerations.
Great, then that is approved. Thank you. Our next up, Jeff Kildall will present the request to remove the 5,000 parts per million residual ethanol limit for cannabis concentrates. Good morning.
Good morning, Chair Postman and Board Member Garrett. On July 11th, 2022, the agency received a rulemaking petition from Colum Tinley of Discovery Garden, a Tier 2 cannabis producer processor licensee. Mr. Tinley submitted the rulemaking petition to request that the agency initiate rulemaking to amend rules to remove the limit for the amount of ethanol solvent that may remain in cannabis concentrates after processing. This numerical limit was recently set in rule in WAC 314-55-102 subsection 3F at 5,000 parts per million. The petitioner asks for a rule change to set no limit on residual ethanol and asserts that there was no limit on residual ethanol before the rule amendments that took place on April 2nd, 2022. The petitioner provides a number of assertions about technical problems related to producing cannabis concentrates with residual ethanol levels below 5,000 parts per million and other drawbacks of products with lower residual levels. Although the limit of 5,000 parts per million in WAC 314-55-102 subsection 3F took effect on April 2nd, 2022, another rule section, WAC 314-55-104, has limited the amount of residual ethanol allowed in cannabis concentrates since that rule was amended in 2015. WAC 314-55-104 requires all residual ethanol to be removed from cannabis concentrates. The amendment to place a limit on in WAC 314-55-102 was completed for consistency with this standard and to establish a limit of 5,000 parts per million for consistent with the levels for other similar class 3 solvents and did not amount to a substantive change to the limit requiring the removal of all ethanol. And because the residual ethanol level in concentrates has been restricted in rule since 2015, and continues to be restricted. Director's office staff recommend that the board deny this petition request.
Any questions? No. Okay, then I think it's the right recommendation. I think this is sounds like based on misunderstanding of what the existing law has been, and regardless, it would move us away from the direction we're going in terms of consumer safety. So take a motion to approve staff recommendation to deny the petition to remove the 5,000 parts per million residual ethanol limit for cannabis concentrates.
I move that we, a motion to deny.
Great, and that then is approved. Thanks, Mr. Kildall. Now you have the next one too. This is the request the petition to update and streamline the SANS sample requirements in WAC 314-55-096.
Thank you, Chair Postman. On July 8th, 2022, the agency received a rulemaking petition from Vicki Christofferson of the Washington Cannabis Association requesting rulemaking to update cannabis sample rules in WAC 314-55-096, a rule section concerning cannabis samples. The rule section was last updated with substantive amendments in 2018. WAC 314-55-096 establishes rules for labeling and transporting samples of usable cannabis, cannabis-infused products, and cannabis concentrates, and prohibits licensees from providing free samples of these cannabis products to retail customers. The rule also designates how cannabis licensees may provide limited free samples of cannabis products to other licensees for negotiating sales, for educational purposes for retail employees, for internal quality control sampling, and for the purpose of making sample jars with screen lids to provide customers access to smell product before they purchase it. In the petition, Ms. Christofferson states that the current rule is cumbersome and costly to licensees without benefiting public safety, and believes that updating these rules would allow greater efficiency and cost savings for licensees while increasing transparency and improving safety. The petitioner suggests three possible subjects for rulemaking. The first is amending rules to allow producer processors to add on additional product units to any retail order as educational samples. The second is to amend rules to place the existing monthly educational sample limit on producer processors instead of retail licensees. And the third area for consideration is removing the internal quality control sample restrictions. From the perspective of public health and safety, agency staff identified some general impacts and possible risk that could result from these suggestions, including increased educational sample sizes and larger numbers of educational samples being accepted by retailers. Staff also identified possible risk with changing the requirements for internal quality control samples. The agency is interested in understanding these perspectives and engaging in a cooperative effort to explore mutual interests with stakeholders, including greater efficiency and cost savings for licensees. It is appropriate to explore how changes to these rules could streamline business practices for cannabis licensees. Based on this agency interest, director's office staff recommend that the board accept this petition request.
Okay. Any questions on this one? Okay, then we'll accept a motion to accept the staff recommendation, which is to accept the petition to update and streamline sample requirements in WAC 314-55-096.
I motion that we accept the rule petition review and consideration.
Great. I second that, then that's approved. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair Postman.
And now we will have Robert Spain present the petition to amend WAC 314-55-015 to allow minors under the age of 16 to be allowed on licensed cannabis premises. Good morning.
Good morning, Chair Postman and Board Member Garrett. Can you hear me okay?
Yep, crystal clear.
Thank you. Today, I am presenting the staff recommendation on a rule petition the board received from Crystal Oliver on July 6, 2022. This petition requests that the board amend WAC 314-55-015 to allow for an exemption to the prohibition of minors under 16 years of age on the premises of licensed cannabis producer and processor facilities, provided the person under 16 years of age is a child or grandchild of the licensee, is not engaging in any work or active employment on the premises, and does not possess any products associated with the production, processing, or sales of cannabis. This rule change request is modeled on the temporary allowance during the COVID-19 outbreak that allowed minors under 16 years of age on the premises under these same specific conditions. So the issue presented by this petition is whether the board should initiate rulemaking to consider an exemption to this prohibition of minors under 16 years of age on premises of licensed cannabis producers and processors as required in WAC 314-55-015. Currently under rule, cannabis license producers and processors premises are restricted to persons at least 21 years or older. WAC 314-55015 sub 2 states all applicants, licensees, and employees working in each licensed establishment must be at least 21 years of age. No one under 21 years of age is allowed to enter or remain on a cannabis licensed premises. The board has the statutory authority to amend this WAC regarding the prohibition of persons under 21 years of age being allowed to enter or remain on a cannabis licensed premises. After receiving the petition, agency staff met to discuss this rule petition, and the staff identified several key issues to consider when evaluating the risks and benefits of creating this exemption: youth access and safety risks, enforcement, and gender equality. Regarding youth access and safety, there are risks associated with expanding access that could lead to accidental or intentional consumption of cannabis. Exposure to industry machinery, equipment, and products may also pose a safety risk. These access and safety risks should also be further explored in the context of federal guidance on this issue. This exemption may also present enforcement risk without additional procedures in place, as the targeted exception group, minors under 16 years of age, may not always carry identification to verify their age. Agency staff find that it will be important to consider procedures, records, and/or processes that identify and record the persons to whom this exemption may apply. An additional issue to be considered is gender equality. Gender equality in the cannabis industry was a common stakeholder discussion topic prior to the COVID-19 outbreak, and the outbreak served to amplify that discussion. The economic downturn caused by the pandemic had substantial implications for gender equality, both during the slowdown and during our subsequent recovery. The employment drop related to social distancing measures and other responsive measures had a large impact on sectors with high female employment shares and in women-owned businesses. Sharing childcare with neighbors, friends, and elderly grandparents was not necessarily an option any longer. This had a particularly significant impact on working mothers who are business owners. If an exemption is considered, agency staff suggest it is important to explore these needs with stakeholders, those related to minors on premises, as well as ongoing school and childcare needs. Considering the issues related to the prohibition of minors under 16 years of age on these licensed cannabis premises, agency staff find that opening up the subject for further public discussion would be beneficial. Initiating the rulemaking process as requested in this petition would allow the agency to begin collaboratively engaging with stakeholders and any interested members of the public to explore the possibility of creating an exemption to the prohibition of minors under 16 years of age on the premises of licensed cannabis producers and processors. So for these reasons, the director's office staff recommends that the board accept Crystal Oliver's rule petition request and initiate rulemaking proceedings. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions on this one? No. Okay. Motion to accept the staff recommendation.
I move that we accept the staff recommendation.
Okay, then that is approved. The petition to amend WAC 314-55015 to allow minors under 16 years of age to be allowed on licensed cannabis premises. Next up is a related one. Staying with you, Mr. Despain, for employees of contractors over the age of 16 on licensed cannabis premises.
Thank you, and good morning again, Chair Postman and Board Member Garrett. Thanks again for allowing me the opportunity to present this staff recommendation on this rule petition. So I'm presenting this on, as you said, a related petition that the board received from Crystal Oliver on July 6th, 2022. This petition requests that the board amend WAC 314-55015 to allow for an exemption to the prohibition of employees of independent contractors under 21 years of age on premises of licensed cannabis producers and processors. Excuse me. Provided the person is at least 16 years of age, is an employee of a contractor engaged in, specific employment such as construction, electrical, plumbing, HVAC, or other, and is not engaging in work directly related to the production, processing, or sales of cannabis. The issue presented by this petition is whether the board should initiate rulemaking to consider an exemption to the prohibition of employees of independent contractors on the premises of licensed cannabis producer and processors, as required by this WAC section, provided the person is at least 16 years of age, is an employee of an independent contractor engaged in specific work, and is not engaging in work directly related to the production, processing, or sales of cannabis. Under current rule, cannabis licensed producers and processor premises are restricted to persons at least 21 years or older. Again, WAC 314-55-015 sub 2 states all applicants, licensees, and employees working in each licensed establishment must be at least 21 years of age. No one under 21 years of age is allowed to enter or remain on a cannabis licensed premises. The board has the statutory authority to amend this WAC regarding the prohibition of persons under 21 years of age. After receiving this petition, agency staff met to discuss and identified several key issues to consider when evaluating the risk and benefits of creating this exemption. Again, youth access and safety risks, enforcement, and also the meaning of employee as found in 314-55 WAC. Regarding youth access and safety, again, there are risks associated with expanding access that could lead to accidental or intentional consumption of cannabis for persons under 21 years of age. And these should be further explored in the context of federal guidance. This exemption may also present enforcement risk without the consideration of additional guardrails, such as requiring underage employees of contractors to maintain proper identification at all times, a maintenance of a list of all contractors that work on site, including duration, frequency, and a daily updated list of all employees of independent contractors to whom this exemption would apply. Agency staff find that it will be important to consider procedures, records, and/or processes that identify and record those persons to whom this exemption will apply. One further issue that may need to be considered is the definition of employee as defined in 314-55 WAC. Currently, employee is defined as any person performing services on a licensed premise for the benefit of the licensee, whether or not such person is compensated by the licensee. So determining whether a contractor is independent or is acting as an employee of a cannabis licensee is fact-driven, but for these purposes, for the purposes of this exemption, it would likely only apply to employees of independent contractors. Additional procedures might need to be considered in order to readily identify independent contractors as needed. Considering the issues related to the prohibition of minors under 21 years of age on premises of licensed cannabis producers and processors, agency staff find that further public discussion on this subject would be beneficial. Initiating the rulemaking process as requested in the petition would allow our agency to begin collaboratively engaging with stakeholders and any interested members of the public in order to explore the possibility of creating an exemption to this prohibition. For these reasons, the director's office staff recommends that the board accept Crystal Oliver's rule petition request and initiate rulemaking proceedings. And I'm happy to answer any questions you might have on this one as well.
I have one. What do you mean by when you're talking about safety and other things in light of federal guidance?
Well, briefly, one of the considerations or concerns is there is a full age gate age restriction on these premises right now for persons 21 years and older. There is some concern, and we haven't explored it, so I can't go into full detail, but there's some concern that even if we carve out exemptions in certain areas, you know, these areas are restricted, these areas are not, we might have some pushback from the federal level. I'm not saying we will, and I'm not saying it's just something to explore and something to consider.
The feds might take that as a sign that we're letting kids around.
That could be it.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Okay. Because, of course, if we really took into consideration what they thought, we wouldn't be able to do anything because they don't want us doing anything. But no, I get your point. I think that's a good one. When we're dealing with things that were, especially in the early days, specific things that were in the call memo, the amount of attention they gave us to keeping it out of the hands of children is a point well taken. I appreciate that. Okay, any questions? No, okay. Motion to accept the staff recommendation to accept the petition to allow employees of contractors over the age of 16 on licensed cannabis premises.
I move that we accept the staff recommendation to open up rules on for consideration.
Great. Second, that's approved. That does it for our petitions today. Just a quick reminder, as Dr. Hoffman has told us a couple times already, we're accepting these. That doesn't mean we'll be jumping on each one of them, because we have a lot of work and we have two more rule packages to talk about still today. It also, when we accept a petition, doesn't mean we will absolutely have a rule that comes out of it. It means we'll have that conversation that Robert was just talking about in this case, and just allows us a more formal way to dig into these issues. It is, I believe, a sign of issues that we think are of importance and worthy of that kind of discussion. So we're going to have a lot on the plate. But now moving to first of two 101s we have before us. Robert, I'll turn it back over to you for the presentation of CR 101 for cannabis advertising.
Thank you, Chair Postman. And thank you both again for the opportunity to be here today. Today, I'm requesting your approval to file a CR 101 pre-proposal statement of inquiry regarding reevaluating current rules related to advertising in cannabis as provided in WAC 314-55-155. For some background, Initiative 502 provided the Washington State Liquor and Cannabis Board with broad rulemaking authority to create rules related to cannabis. RCW 6950-369-10 directed the board to adopt rules implementing statutory provisions related to advertising in cannabis. In response to this mandate, the board adopted rules as WAC 314-55-155 in 2013 that established a framework for advertising in cannabis. Since the last substantive amendments to this WAC section occurred in 2018, the cannabis advertising landscape has rapidly expanded in scope and content across multiple advertising platforms. And as a result, the LCB would like to consider creating new, amending, or repealing existing rule sections as necessary to update these advertising requirements for licensed cannabis businesses. Revisions may also include clarifying and technical updates to our existing rules. So if approved today, the CR 101 will be filed with the Office of the Code Advisor. The LCB public webpage will be updated. Notice will be circulated to Gov Delivery subscribers, and the informal comment period will begin. This notice will also be published in the Washington State Register under WSR 2218 on September 21st, 2022. The informal public comment period will end on October 21st, 2022. We anticipate bringing a CR 102, the proposed rulemaking, to the board for consideration on December 7th. Our tentative target date for bringing a set of final rules to the board is February 15th, 2023. So happy Valentine's Day. That concludes my presentation on the CR 101 rule package related to cannabis advertising, and I'm happy to answer any questions you might have on this rule project.
Any questions, Mayor Garrett? Okay. None from me. This is a big one, and look forward to that conversation. Is there a motion to approve the CR 101 for cannabis advertising?
I move that we approve the CR 101 for cannabis advertising.
Great. And I second that. That is approved. Thank you, Mr. Despain, for all of that.
Thank you.
And now we'll be back here in the room to Jeff Kildall for a presentation of a CR 101 on cannabis plant canopy.
Thank you, Chair Postman and Board Member Garrett. This morning, I would like to request your approval to file a CR 101 pre-proposal statement of inquiry to allow for consideration of possible rulemaking to amend WAC 314-55-075 and WAC 314-55-010 regarding cannabis plant canopy. This rulemaking may be needed to update and modernize rule language regarding plant canopy as it is defined in WAC 314-55-010, subsection 31. We do anticipate significant stakeholder engagement in the rule development process, and we have adjusted our tentative timeline to compensate for that stakeholder work. So if approved for filing today, we could tentatively bring a CR 102 to you for consideration on January 18th, 2023, which would set a public hearing date for the March 1st, 2023 board meeting. And under that timeline, the earliest we could bring a CR 103 to you for approval would be March 15th, 2023. And on this basis, I would ask for your approval to file this CR 101 today. And that concludes my presentation for this CR 101 package. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Great. Okay. Thank you. I think this one is very, very important and is also going to be complicated. Hope we get lots of good input and people are able to work collaboratively to figure out the new version of this or whatever it may look like. With that, motion to approve the CR 101 for cannabis plant canopy.
I move approval of the CR 101 for cannabis plant canopy.
Great. And I second and that is approved. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Now we have a public hearing on alcohol issue, and I'll turn it back to Audrey Basin for that.
Thank you, Chair Postman, Board Member Garrett. So before the public hearing today, I'd like to provide some background on this rule proposal. This is the public hearing on the proposed rule supplement 2022 legislation, Senate Bill 5940. So on July 20th, the board filed the CR 102 rule proposal to implement 2022 legislation, Senate Bill 5940. This bill created a new endorsement allowing breweries, wineries, and distilleries to contract with each other to provide certain packaging services, such as canning, bottling, bagging, mixing, and repacking. To develop the rule proposal, we held a series of internal project team meetings with staff from the Licensing Division, Enforcement and Education Division, and Finance Division. The project team created conceptual draft rules that we shared publicly for feedback through Gov Delivery in June 2022. The comments that we received on the conceptual draft rules were included in Attachment B to the CR 102 memo and were taken into consideration as the rule proposal was developed. So in summary, this rule proposal would create three new rule sections and amend one existing rule section. The proposed new rule sections describe the contract packaging services endorsement, how to submit an application for endorsement, and the proposed amendments to WAC 3 and 411.065 would align the existing rule with the Senate bill by allowing licensees with this type of endorsement to keep other types of liquor on premises as needed to provide contract packaging services. So for example, a brewery that's providing contract packaging services to a winery could keep wine on premises for that purpose. After the CR 102 rule proposal was filed with the code revisor on July 20th, information about the rule proposal and how to comment was sent to Gov Delivery subscribers and posted on the rules webpage. We have not received any public comments so far. The public comment period opened on July 20th and will close at the end of day today, August 31st. So in terms of timeline, if no substantive changes need to be made to the rule language, the earliest the board could consider adopting the final rules would be September 14th, which would place the effective date on October 15th. So that concludes my presentation. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
No questions. And so now it's time for the public hearing. Do we have anybody signed up for the public hearing?
Good morning, Chair Postman. We did not have anybody registered for the open public testimony today.
Okay, then we will close the public hearing on SB 5940 contract packaging services.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, that moves us to general public comment. Couple reminders. We have some people in the room here. We have some people online. For all, it's 4 minutes. You'll be given a 30-second warning to close. We really ask you to finish on time. We're going to begin with people that are in the room, and then they'll come to the podium. If then we'll move to people who are online, and then we'll just ask everyone to be patient as we, after we call the name, we'll give you a minute and us a minute to make the connections necessary to do that. So with that, we will move to those who signed up in the room. The first is Peter Manning. Morning, Mr. Manning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair Postman. I'd like to say hi to Board Member Alan Garrett. My name is Peter Manning from Black Excellence Cannabis. You know, as always, I always have something that I'd like to say about equity and what we need to be doing to make it more reachable here in the state is that, you know, I've been coming to these meetings for since 2014. And you know, it's like at some point in life we have to include ourselves in something if we're a part of it. And I've come here, I've witnessed many denominations and ethnic groups come here and express their feelings towards the LCB and the progress they're making. But when it comes to the Black diaspora and the brown diaspora, these are just, we're still dealing with equity. We're still dealing with diversity. The demographics of the cannabis industry in Washington is white, period. And I have been fighting the fight to get this inclusion. And before us today, I'm dealing with, which I just have to say this before I continue. I'm really happy that the LCB adopted the draft rules that they adopted. I think that is a doable and feasible plan. However, I have a problem with that mobility. I don't see the benefit of handing someone something they can't use. If you give a person a license and it's not mobile and it's in a dead zone, if the license is virtually dead, it's no good. It can be labeled as equity. You know, we cannot do that. We can't give someone a car without a motor and tell them that's equitable transportation. That's a lot. And, you know, we here at Black Excellence Cannabis, we cannot stand by as the vanguard of that group, the Black and brown, and let this happen. We think that we need to reach out and work with LCB on this mobility issue, as well as the certificate holders. I don't think that we should cram the certificate holders in the social equity bill. I think what we should do is allow the certificate holders a different avenue to reach their goal. I mean, they have been sitting around for the last 10 years or 7 years or 8 years, whatever it may be, and holding onto various properties and spending cash that they probably don't have to maintain one day of getting a license. And that's being hopeful. And that hope shouldn't be placed on the back of social equity. We are attaching a lot to social equity on weak needs. Social equity is very weak in the state. So why are we attaching all this stuff to it? It makes no sense. It's almost like it's being set up to fail. And there's another thing I want to address. When it comes to enforcement, I was around in 2015 when enforcement was the top priority for the LCB. Black people, the brown people that own dispensaries in Seattle were forcefully closed with the help of the LCB. To my surprise today, there are white-owned collective gardens popping up all over the state with no regulations. We have Delta 8 and Delta 9 moving through our neighborhoods rapidly with our young kids obtaining the substance. And the governor and the LCB, all you guys are just standing around.
Peter, you have about 30 seconds.
We are just not happy. We need to sit down at the table and meet with the people that we need to meet with to make these problems go away. And we have a new member of Black Excellence Cannabis with us today. And I'll let that person be. Thank you very much.
Great, thank you. The next person we have signed up here in the room is Mike Asai.
Good morning, board members, Postman and Ms. Garrett. My name is Mike Asai, founder of Emerald City Collective, first downtown Seattle dispensary. I am the vice president of Black Excellence in Cannabis, a nonprofit organization fighting for Black and brown inclusion in Washington State, in the Washington State billion-dollar cannabis market. First, I'd like to comment on the current farmers market not regulated by the LCB. How can this be? This is problematic to the whole cannabis market. This should not be allowed. If Black and Brown were to do this, we would be met with extreme force by the LCB and the state. Today, we have 40 retail licenses for the social equity program. Out of the 40 available, only 16 are in non-ban moratoriums. 24 are simply no good. As I have stated before, these licenses have to be made mobile throughout the state. How can the path to social equity and cannabis happen if LCB doesn't make all the 40 licenses mobile? Making these social equity licenses mobile does not add to the current allotment. It simply redirects the current allotment for the social equity program. LCB has the power to make this happen without legislation. I respectfully ask the LCB to make a social equity program that will be a success for Black and Brown applicants, not only today, this year, but for many years to come. If the licenses are issued the way it stands today, this would not be a successful social equity program. I thank the LCB for the hard work put into the social equity program, but there is much more work needed. Thank you for hearing my testimony.
Thank you. Next is Vicki Christofferson.
Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to speak briefly. I'm Vicki Christofferson. I'm here today on behalf of the Washington Cannabis Business Association. And I just wanted to, first of all, thank you for taking up the two rule petitions that we put forward. Chair Postman, you said it yesterday and again today, we understand that the scope of work currently being considered in rulemaking is significant, and I appreciate that. Also, thank you for bringing up the issue of advertising and canopy. Those are all issues we've talked about for years, and just wanted to put forth our willingness and wanting to collaborate with the agency as the stakeholder process begins. Our attempt in bringing the two petitions we did was not to presuppose a outcome, but rather to begin the conversation with the agency and the rest of the stakeholders. And just wanted to say thank you for that, and we're ready to get to work. Thank you.
Great, thank you. So my anxiety about staffing and things was evident. Okay. I thought I was being subtle. Thank you. We will now move to the people who are signed up online with us. The first is Sammy Saad. Just give Dustin 1 second here. Okay, Mr. Saad, I think we should be able to hear you. Go ahead.
Yes, can you hear me very well?
Yep, can see you and hear you. Good morning.
Yes, sir. Good morning, sir. Hi for you, all of you guys. I want to say, Peter Manny, we miss you because I met you before the social equity passed, the SB 2070, and you promised me we oppose this bill because it's not for us. It's not helping us. My name is Sami Saad. I own the first weed shop. It's medical, or you guys call it cannabis. You know, change the word. Medical cannabis in Washington, in Seattle, in Greenwood, 323 North 105th Street. Now is a respectful white Jewish came next to me. And it's nothing against Jewish. I'm mixed with Jewish. I'm mixed with Arab and mixed with African. And I'm one of the community speaking on behalf of my community. When this bill is failed, the legislator asked me, Mr. Saad, why you want to make it fail? This is for you guys. I said, no, they say it's not for us. Peter told me that and the other people. Ellie Garrett, I met her before that, and she said, we will help you. And she listened to me publicly, her and Paula Saldana. And Paula Saldana, she sit with me and my fiance sit in on a stair. But unfortunately, Ellie Garrett told me, do not call this phone ever again after I called her 2 weeks later. And unfortunately, later I found out Ellie Garrett, her boyfriend, he have a shop. And that shop with Netmile is in it's called Emerald Haze, and now they still want to sell some of the percentage. So really, she helped her boyfriend, and I'm sorry. I heard about a tragedy story for you, but this is nothing got to do with that. This is about what happened to us about shops. You guys really want to help us because this is going circle, like Peter said. Sami Saad have 12 green. It exists before you guys. if I don't see myself there, this is, there's no equality. You guys looking for 16 and 17, or you guys want to add them for license? When are you going to add those black people you took from their mouths? I lost thousands of dollars. My shop was closed by the fake police from you guys as LCB. I want to see what the governor did to us. So the legislator lied to us. That means our voice is not count, right? And you guys as a delegate. Let me ask you this one as LCB. Do you guys just approve anything and just support each other because backing each other up as a lobby? Or do you guys want to make something equal for us? And what did Ellie Garrett did to black, to those black license holder as still holding cannabis, medical cannabis licensing? We're still filing zero every month. And the other thing is too, do you know most cannabis on those market, 80% is from the black market. They repackage it. It's not even grow it. Have you ever checked the quality? I am a business owner, and at the same time, I use it as medicine. It's not a good quality. The other thing is too, why all listen white don't play by the rule we say we're talking about Jewish. No, but the white Jewish, they get more licensing in Washington. Black left alone. I am mixed with Jewish, and nothing against Jewish. But even if you give anyone Africa more than you give white, that's not equality. You guys, when you guys gonna help us and be respected? And the legislator, they disrespected us because they passed something and you guys not include us. Mr. David, what did you do for us? The new gentleman came, appointed by a legislator. Paula Saldana called me. She said, do not talk about Ellie Garrett. I will help you. And before that, she said, I'm not going to help you because you don't have a license and you never apply for a license. I did apply and that's been approved. We filed a lawsuit. Even the law, they said you didn't apply. And I apply and I have my approved. And now
Sammy, it's that's public, your 4 minutes. Please
publicly,
your
people, they see it in change.org and they see it on social media. I did apply for you guys. I did pay my money. You guys did not treat it equal. You guys pushed me away. We're going to fight until the end. Until when? Making it as a circle and about money, about we get.
You went a little over your time there. Well, I'm sure we'll have another chance to hear from you. Next signed up is Christopher King. Did he join?
Chair Postman, Christopher King did register to speak, but okay. Is not online with us today.
Kevin Shelton, are you with us today?
And I don't see Kevin Shelton online either, sir.
Okay. Just double check that list. See, we'll give them half a second here to see if they're. Kevin Shelton, Christopher King. Seeing none. Okay. We will have to catch them next time. And as always, if they or anybody has comments they want to submit in writing, you can email that to us. And with that takes us to the end of our agenda for a long board meeting. Appreciate everybody's patience and participation. With that, we'll adjourn the board meeting for August 31st, 2022. We'll see you next week for a board caucus. Thank you. Bye, Ellie.